A couch potato warning is in effect as DirecTV transforms Thanksgiving into Streamsgiving. DirecTV's got free TV nationwide. With a heavy front of 60-plus live channels and a steady stream of streaming apps, conditions are perfect for nonstop entertainment. So hunker down on the couch and sign up for your free trial of My Entertainment from DirecTV. I'm going to watch some free TV.
Start streaming My Entertainment from DirecTV now at streamsgiving.com. My free is free. Paid services. 5-day free trial, then auto renews monthly. Cancel anytime. Temporary credit hold may apply. Restrictions apply. See streamsgiving.com for details. AI produced.
This is CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor. Here's John Batchelor.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Edward Carr, the deputy editor of The Economist magazine in London. Observing the pandemic midway or toward the end, we don't know. And from the point of view of not the rich countries, not the poor countries, but the middle-income countries, we begin in Thailand. The pandemic has been with us worldwide now since the winter spring of 2020. However, my conversations with Thailand early, this is Chiang Mai, north of Thailand, is that what my memory is that people were going about their business as late as the summertime and not particularly bothered by the virus. And yet now, Edward, a very good day to you. Thank you for this. Thailand, I'd put down as a wonderful culture, friendly culture, but not burdened by the virus. And now that has all changed. How has it expressed itself, especially in the capital city, Bangkok? And how does this relate to middle-income countries experiencing unrest? Good evening to you.
Hi, John. Well, it's great to be with you. Thanks very much for having me along here. Yes, Thailand's really interesting. It's all about this Delta variant, which is, what, two, maybe three times more infectious than the original variant, and it's having a really big and different effect in these countries. Thailand's one of them. It managed to escape pretty much, very lightly, the first few waves, and this latest wave of infections is having a real effect on the country. Now, what is it that these things do? What they do is they expose so many of the underlying tensions. And of course, in Thailand, there are underlying tensions with the army having suppressed democracy, with a long history of battling red shirts and yellow shirts. And all of these problems have sort of bubbled up to the surface again because people feel that the government isn't looking after them.
The protests take the form of street theater in Bangkok and Thailand. Does that mean these are not confrontations, as we will discuss later, say, in South Africa and Colombia? Is this a more mannered approach, or is it early days, Edward? Your measure.
I think it's early days. I mean, the government, under the guise of sort of pandemic measures to stop infection, the government has introduced pretty draconian rules on people's freedom to gather on the streets. So when people do get on the streets, they are breaking those rules. And it's mostly been, you say, street theater. People have taken sacks and filled them with hay and then pretended that they're corpses and then set a light to them and said, you know, this is what the government's doing. These people are dying. So it's been like that, but there's a long way to go. As you said, at the top of this, there's a long way to go still in this pandemic, and tensions, I believe, will rise.
You call upon the Institute for Economics and Peace in Sydney, observing protests. Do we see a pattern that's been broken by the pandemic, Edward?
What we see is that they keep a tally of significant protests. And their pattern over the past decade has been, since the financial crisis, a steady growth in significant protests around the world. And then the pandemic starts and protests go right down. And it's not hard to understand why. I mean, if you're worried about catching a disease, being in a crowd of people who are all screaming and shouting is probably not a very good idea. But after a while, the protests start to bubble up again. And I think it's because people get fed up with being locked down. And the Institute for Economics and Peace say now that they reckon in 2020, the total number of protests were up 10%, which is pretty amazing when you think the conditions and the laws should have been making protests reduce.
You mentioned Tunisia. This is recent news. Tunisia was the site, Tunis, the beginning of the Arab Spring in 2010, 2011 is my memory. But Tunisia is now in between because there's a movement for the leader Saeed to consolidate power in his office, perhaps something we've seen before in other countries. Can we tie this latest disruption in Tunisia to the pandemic? Do we know?
I think we can. Again, the pandemic plays a catalyzing role. If there weren't significant problems in the society, the pandemic on its own won't, I think, cause major upheavals. But Tunisia was an unhappy country. It is the country, as you said, that coming out of the Arab Spring that could claim to have replaced a dictator with a democracy. But it's been a democracy that hasn't satisfied people. There have been a series of unstable governments. People haven't been happy. And then what happens? Again, Delta comes along and cases in Tunisia suddenly rocket. And it's now got the highest number of cases per 100,000 people in the Arab world. So the sense that the governments are failing them on the pandemic as well is like the final straw that brings people out onto the streets.
Another country that's much in the news here, and it's a middle-income country, but it's a country in controversy for the bulk of my lifetime, Edward, which is Cuba. Cuba is now experiencing disruption in a way we're told that is fresh. Young people are protesting because of the lack of anything to buy, or the lack of hard currency, or the inability for people to remit back to their families in Cuba. This, again, is a puzzle, but if we approach it from the pandemic, this is a country that's boasted of its health care. Can we tie the pandemic to the protests in Havana and outward and other cities far away from Havana?
I think we can. It's really fascinating what's happened in Cuba. And these protests you're talking about are, by some people's accounts, the biggest ones that we've seen under communism there. Very spread out, as you say. And let's think about some of the things that the Cuban Revolution was supposed to have done for the Cuban people. And one of those is the provision of healthcare. People might not have jeans and they might not have all the consumer goods they want, but they were supposed at least to have good healthcare. Well, there's been a collapse in hard currency. Tourism stops. The economy is, 11% down. People who used to bring in goods to sort of sell on the black market can't bring them anymore. So there's a sense of hardship. But without the hard currency, the government can't buy the ingredients it needs to make drugs. So it's not just the COVID sickness that's a problem in Cuba. It's also that people who want drugs for all sorts of other diseases, maybe they need insulin or they need antibiotics, they can't get hold of them. So this, one of the key promises that the regime promised Cuban people, one of their key promises is being broken.
Middle-income countries. We need some definitions here and why middle-income countries are especially in question here. A middle-income country, we've named three, Tunisia, Thailand, and Cuba. There are more to go. Middle-income country also has what you report as patchy vaccination. That's immediately. But longer term, this reminds me, Edward, of how we were taught that the French Revolution was a product of raised expectations by the French people. Is that generality still accurate when we apply to middle-income countries that hit a hard wall?
Well, I think you make a good point there, John. I mean, they're caught in an unhappy sort of medium position. If you think of the rich countries, they've got two things that they can give their people. One is vaccines, and the other is they can borrow enough money, their governments can borrow enough money to be able to see them through some of the difficult moments of the pandemic. Then you go to the other end, the really poor countries, the poorest countries of all. I'm thinking of countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Well, there people have a tough life, and they have to deal with all sorts of things. And you know what? They don't have very many expectations of their governments. Their governments are often a source of trouble for them rather than anything else. And then in the middle, and also actually one other thing about the poorest countries, they have very young populations. Malawi, for instance, its median age, the age of its average person is only 18. Well, one of the things we know about COVID is that young people are much, much less affected by the disease than older people. Well, if you take middle income companies, they do badly on all of these things. They haven't got the vaccines, because vaccine distribution and manufacture hasn't been equal. Their governments haven't got the money to subsidize their citizens through the pandemic. They have older populations, and COVID hits older people. They have fat populations, in some cases as fat as rich countries, and obesity is not great either. And people have, and this is the point you are making, John, people have expectations of their governments. They expect their governments to be able to help them out of a situation. And when they don't, as has happened in so many Latin American countries in particular, then people get angry.
Middle-income countries. I'm speaking with Edward Carr, the deputy editor of The Economist magazine. He's in London. And when we come back, surprising explanations for recent headlines in South Africa, in Colombia, and even in Belarus. Belarus is a striking example of raised expectations despite the boot of a dictator. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Eastern and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.